was 1210 south and 1411 east. And it was a two-story home. We thought it'd be a great place to raise children. It had a large backyard in it. And being in the circle, we was off the regular traffic on the roads. It was selling, I think, for $20,000, somewhere around there. And so we put our home up for sale, and we had paid only $4,200 for it, but now, because of inflation, it was worth $13,000. We ended up selling it for the $13,000. And after we cleared off what we owed on it, because we had remodeled it and reborrowed on it a couple times, we had the $5,000 put down on Laird Circle, which were required to do that. So we moved in at Laird Circle, and the first thing I did was took the basement, and I built an apartment down there so we could rent it. So in case of any emergency here, if we needed to, we'd always have that additional income. And we rented it to young couples, a lot of different young couples throughout the years as our family was growing. In this home, the first child that was born here was Kathy, and following her was born Susan, and then Christine, and then finally our last was Michael. And all of these children, of course, are married now except Michael, who is on a mission, and they all have families of their own. Myrna has three children. Karen, which is the oldest, she's older than our youngest son, Michael, and she'll be marrying in February, so won't be too long. Maybe I'll be a great-grandfather. And next to her is Myrna's children is Carla, and then Kevin, who is about 13 years of age. And Janet Kay has four children, Jason the oldest, followed by Becky. And then and Jennifer, and the youngest is Ben Aaron. France has three children, John, who was named after my father, and Jeff, and the new baby called Sarah. And Susan has two children, and she's the oldest one's called Mike, and the younger one is Mark. And Christine is just pregnant, and she's expecting sometime in February. And of course, Mike, as I mentioned, is still on a mission. Myrna married Kenneth Agard, and Jana Kay married Bill Conover, and France married Anne. Gosh, I forgot her name, last name. And Kathy married Thomas Schoenfeld. Susan married Michael Berry, but is divorced. And Christine's married to Noel Simpson. And of course, doing this all thing, I forgot Ron, who was the next the oldest, and he married Durian Densley, and they have five children. They have a lot of K's in the family. Myrna named all her children with K's, and Ronnie named all his children with K's. So it's quite interesting. But we've had a big family, and it's been a lot of fun raising them. We've had a lot of good times and a few hard times, but it hasn't been too bad. I've always had work. I worked Grand Central, counting the time I first started. I haven't been an employee there for the last numbers of years. I've had my own advertising agency and handle their account. But counting all of it, the time I associated with them as advertising agent and employee, it's been about 43 years. So working for the one place and never being unemployed in all those years, why, we've been able to get by, and the Lord's blessed us, and we've been able to do well. Before Mike was born, we entered onto a new venture. We had bought some property out in Sandy on 86 South and 17th East. and we were thinking of trying to get away where we had a little bit of land. But the fellow that owned some property there along joining me taught me into subdividing this property, which was a bad mistake because we did it at the time the recession hit us, and a lot of the bills came due on all the subdividing, and I had to start selling the lots in order to pay for the subdividing. And while the recession was on, the property values were kind of holding down low, and so I couldn't get the price out of them that I should have. I remember selling one real large lot for $1,900, and I guess that lot today would sell for about $15,000. But then I guess we don't know all these things, or if I'd been smart, I would have held on to this property. But anyway, because I had this property, I thought I was going to make a lot of money on this subdividing. We became interested in some property in San Pete County owned by Rhoda's cousin, Arda. Otis and Corbett. So we went down there one time and looked it over. And so we purchased this from her about 20 years ago. And we've been developing it ever since. And today we call it Cedar Crest Lodge. And has lodging units, has a restaurant. And it's been a long years of experience, but a lot of years of fun and things. We've always had some horses there. As the kids grew up, all of them had horses to ride. And I remember when Mike was little, about 3 years old, I had a Shetland pony, and he and I used to go riding on our horses, and it was a lot of fun with the kids there. I guess it had its bad points. It always took us away on weekends from this area. Maybe it wasn't too good for the kids. I just hope that the other experiences they had at Cedar Crest made up for any loss they may have had in this area staying here, because the only time we could go was on weekends. And working in the retail industry, it was very tough to even get away Saturday. They expected you to be there day and night and working all the time, you know. They didn't give you days off except Sunday. And so I would take my vacations to Saturdays so that we could go down there, and I started planting fruit trees and started developing it. And if we'd owned it a number of years, why, we started building onto the... First, we built the upstairs in the old Pioneer home, which was built of adobe, and we built an apron in and upstairs, and later on, we built a wing on. And then we built the new building, which we call Linderhof. And the old one we call Lindenhaus, after the linden tree that is in the yards that came from Germany as a little seedling. I guess the home is nearing 100 years old, and also that huge linden tree. So it has a lot of charm and a lot of atmosphere. It has a lot of meaning. It's been in and out of Rhoda's family for years. The original builders was Charles Musage and Emmerette Musage. And Emmerette was Rhoda's great aunt. So, I guess not great aunt, she was her grand aunt. Her grandmother's sister. So it's been a lot of years have gone by very rapidly. I've been so busy down there trying to develop and do different things. I did a lot of the building myself, so we've all put a lot into it. I hope the kids appreciate what sacrifice we made for it to build this. And we could have built it, I guess we could have taken the money and done a lot of other things. Maybe some things more wise, I don't know. But I'm sure that we had done a lot of things less wise, such as maybe buying more cars or just spending it foolishly. So at least where we got the land and we got the buildings there, and it's all paid for. So there's no mortgage over it. And so I feel this is kind of an attainment. And we owe it all to the kids willing to help along and see us through it, and to Rhoda for being willing to go down and build it. And of course, she got a lot of enjoyment out of building it. She likes to build, and she likes beautiful things. So when we built the reception center, why, that was a height of a fine building, and it's almost like the interior of the temple. It's so beautiful. And I think she got a lot of enjoyment out of that. At least I hope so. We've had a good life together, and She's been a really a good wife and a wonderful mother. I guess we all make a few mistakes, and I guess I make more than any of them, anyone else. But we hope that all the things that we've done has contributed to somewhat to the community, to the area, and to our children. They're all the children are real fine people, and credit to the community. They all do very well. They're all financially able to care for themselves. I guess Susan probably has it hardest being divorced. She supports her own two children, but she's quite energetic and hardworking, very good mother. And all the girls are very good mothers, and all the boys are very good fathers to their children. So I think that this in itself brings a lot of satisfaction to one's life. Kind of get a little bit hoarse doing so much talking, so I'll kind of stop for tonight. I'd like to tell a little bit about my work in the advertising field. As I mentioned before, I started as a sign painter for Grand Central. At that time, it had three food stores, which we called supermarkets in those days. They weren't too large, or as large as the big markets are today, but they were much larger than the corner grocery store. I worked for them, doing all different kinds of signs, inside signs for the displays and big banners for outside, whatever type of signs was needed. And I was one of the first ones in the Salt Lake area to start doing silkscreen work. And I found out how to do this and did a lot of silkscreen signs for throughout all the food stores. Grand Central later on was owned, and originally the founder was Maurice Warshaw, was a Jewish immigrant who had come from Russia around 1905 and started in the Salt Lake Valley just with a push cart peddling produce. And he developed these stores into these. Both my brothers had worked for him, so I went to work for him as a sign painter. After a few years, this had developed, and I noticed their newspaper ads were done quite poorly. And at that time, the newspaper was doing them. They didn't have really an advertising manager, advertising department, or anything. So I approached them on the idea of doing these ads, newspaper ads. So I started doing first the toy ads. This is the area that they had expanded into, is to develop a toy department, which eventually became big non-food operations. And of course, today, Grand Central Stores, which is a drug-type junior department store outlets, are in about five states. And so I started doing these little toy ads and just kept growing until as the company grew. I then became advertising manager and developed the whole advertising department until we had about 13 people working for us. We had everything from the printing shop to dark room, everything we needed to turn out all the signs that this company needed, as well as all the newspaper ads. During this period of developing the ads, I had won a few awards. The main one was I won first place in the United States in McCall's 9th Annual Advertising Awards, which was kind of interesting. And Rhoda and I went back, this was before Mike was born, and we went back to New York City and then down to Atlantic City, where we received the award. I received some other awards for newspaper work. I received several awards from the March of Dimes and the American Cancer Society, and helping them in their advertising programs to try to bring their message to the people of Salt Lake. So in all, I've been in the same business practically all my life, and it's had its good points and bad points. I guess advertising is like politics and religion. Everybody knows the answer. So you don't have the prestige you do if you're, say, a doctor or a dentist. People usually listen to what the doctor tells them. If he writes out a prescription, why, they fill it and they take the medication. But in advertising, even though a person is well-trained, which I tried to become through the years, it's very difficult to get people to accept your knowledge. Everybody feels they know everything there is about it, so it's become kind of a problem in that respect. And my son Ron, who also entered into this business, worked for me at Grand Central for a long time, then went out on his own business, has found similar problems of communicating with people and getting them to be willing to yet let you utilize your creative ideas in developing a program for them that will pay off. But in spite of all the problems, my earnings have always been good throughout the years. So there's always been sufficient money to raise the family and do some of the things we like to do. Some of those things has been our travels. We've been fortunate because buying time with some of the television stations, they have sponsored tours throughout the world, so we've been able to go on several of those. Our first trips we took was, of course, on our own, had nothing to do with the TV stations. We went to Japan in 1970 during the expo there. We took Mike with us, and he was about 12 years old then. So we enjoyed that very much. And then we went to Europe, and also Mike went with us there. And we went from England and then into Amsterdam, down through Germany, Switzerland, into Rome, and then back to Paris. And that was quite an interesting thing. And then the television station developed these tours, so we've been able to go on all those. We went to Puerto Rico, went to both sides of Mexico, over on the Yucatan Peninsula and over in Puerto Vallarta, and then we've been into Mexico City and the city of Merida, so it's been, we've seen quite a bit of Mexico. We just returned recently from Japan again on a KUTV tour, and on our way back, this was in last September, we stopped at Hawaii and met Mr. and Mrs. Warshaw, and we spent 4 days there with them, and toured around the island, spent a day over at the Polynesian Cultural Center, and had a really good time. We had been previously to Spain, and were able to visit the Alhambra, and round through Granada area, and Malaga, and we'd been to Rome, back to Rome again on a KSL tour, and to London, and from London, that was last May, we went to London, and we toured up into Scotland. And so it was really a lot of fun. Mike went with us on the first trip to Japan and the trip to Europe and two of the trips to Mexico, but was unable to go on the others with us. We'd like to have been able to take some of the other kids, but it was just a little bit more money than we could afford, and most of them were with their families now, so they weren't able to do this. And we've had a kind of a full life and enjoyed a lot of things. I don't know anyone that's been any more blessed than we had. We've only had only one tragedy and the death of one of our daughters, but all in all, life has been very good to us, and we're happy for the kids. We all get along with each other fine, and there's no bad feelings, so I think that life is, over and all, has been very good. I guess it's like the book that wrote in the life of Mr. Warshaw. The title was Life is More Sweet Than Bitter, and I guess that's the way it is. It's, life is more sweet than bitter. Rhoda now is in Russia. She should be back next Tuesday. She's writing a new novel called Ben Aaron, and she, of course, did a lot of research writing the first book about Russia and about the United States in the earlier periods, around the early 1900s, during the period of the immigrants. But she felt she needed to get to Russia and get a more of a feeling of the area, so she's over there now trying to learn what she can about it so that she can complete the book, which is just about ready to go to the printer. We're just waiting for her to come back. So I'm kind of sitting here alone, which isn't much fun. As you had your mate around you all your life, and I went one time without her on a fishing trip for about 3 or 4 days. I took the Starkist tuna boat out from Los Angeles. But otherwise, we've always been together in all our trips. And so this is the first time that she's been away without me, but she went with Beth Roberts. I didn't particularly care to go, and I didn't feel like this time I could spend the money. And I'm kind of allergic to cold anyway from my early experiences delivering on a bicycle in the winter, so I don't care too much about going where it's cold, and you can't really enjoy the the country and see the things that you'd like to. And if I toured Russia, I'd like to have gone into the southern part, down around the Black Sea and into Romania and some of those countries. So maybe that'll come later. This coming February, we're scheduled to go to Acapulco in Mexico. And this will be our third trip to Mexico. This is in conjunction with the Boise television station, so that'll be kind of nice there. We leave on January 30th, so we'll be right in probably the worst part of the winter while we'll be down basking in the sunshine. So we're kind of looking forward to that. I think I should kind of record a little bit of my philosophy in life. Of course, I belong to the LDS Church and a member of the High Priest Quorum in Yale Second Ward, and have belonged to that quorum for a number of years. Before that, I was a 70 and was in the 70s presidency. I'm active in the ward whenever we're here, but I guess I don't get too enthused about going to church down in San Pete County. The little ward down there, people are a little bit different. And I used to get tired of them just reading the lesson out of the book, so I wasn't too active, but I believe in the church and the principles it stands for, and try to get all the kids to adhere to it. All three boys have been on mission, so they are quite steadfast in the church. All the children go to church, except a couple of them, and they're still very nice children, and their husband is very, very fine person. That's Chris, and Susie, of course, has no husband, and she doesn't go, although she should, and she would be able to take the little boys to go to church. But I think Chris and Noel would be a little happier, too, to be able to tie themselves into a group for this social reason. It's just the reason you shouldn't go to church, but it's a big aspect in one's life to be able to develop friends and go to the different ward functions and programs and services. It kind of fills a lot of one's life and gets one out meeting people and helps one in their own work. I know the church helped me considerably in my work. I was quite shy and quite backward. It was very difficult for me to meet people, talk to them, and communicate. And the first breakthrough was taking some lessons from Royal Garf on public speaking at the university. Then I started going to church and got interested in some classes, and we belong to some firesides, and just expressing yourself in some of these meetings and groups helps one considerably. I know it helped me a lot in my work, so that I was able, when the opportunities arose, I was able to fill those particular positions, and so that I was able to advance myself in the field of advertising and be recognized in the community as one of the better informed in the field of advertising. And like I mentioned before, working with the charitable organizations, I received awards from them for the help I gave them. My philosophy politically is a Republican, with leaning far to the conservative viewpoint, maybe not like as far as the John Birchers are, but I feel that our government has slowly been taking our freedoms away from us, and the democratic liberal philosophy of just spending, 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 is slowly putting this government into bankruptcy and creating many problems, which today many of the young people are realizing the inflationary problem is just the final bitter pill that they are swallowing from what has been going on for the last 30, 40 years. I think that one of the greatest evils, of course, of the big government is the bureaucracy, both on a state level as well as a federal level. I started with the federal, now the states seem to find out how to do it, to tax and tax and tax and set up more boroughs to control the lives of people. This big brother attitude of government has just got to go. If this government's going to survive, we can't continually finance these leeches on society, which I feel they are. And many organizations, many boroughs, have more authority than the President of the United States or the governor. You know, the governor can't come in and lock your business up, or the President of the United States can. You have to go through court, through due process of law, but there's many organizations which can come down and actually lock up your door. The Internal Revenue for one, and OSHA, and there's others that can put a person out of business. Their rules and regulations are so complex and so costly that because of all these things, it continually raises the price of goods. A lot of things look good on the surface, like the Ralph Nader Group. You know, they try to see that the pajamas that kids wore were flame-proof so that kids couldn't catch on fire, you know. Well, of course, most of the kids that die don't die from the fire anyway. They die from the smoke. But they get over-imbued with this protective philosophy, and consequently, they get all the people enthused, and, oh, yeah, that's good, you know, and all the mothers think, oh, that's a great idea. And all of a sudden, all the regulations that have to go in the business community and manufacturers pretty soon puts the price of the product so high that people wonder what happened. Well, when there's so many regulations to go through, like they have, for instance, in the automotive industry, which is just continually raise the price on cars until right now they're almost beyond a person's ability to purchase one. And all these things seem good on the surface, but the end result is bad. And we need a reawakening in the country, and I think that there is a tendency or trend towards conservative philosophy that with the unions being so democratic, and everybody votes for their own pocketbook. And between the unions and all those people who are getting fat on big government contracts and all the public workers, right now they number more than the rest of the people. And so it's very difficult to put these people out of office because people won't stand up for principle and for what's best for the country. They all vote because they're afraid they'll lose their job if they should vote the party out. And it's become a vicious situation where we're unable to bring the constitutional government to our nation because of this terrible control, this stranglehold that they have upon the people. And by nature, conservative isn't very outgoing or very outspoken anyway. He wants to run his own life and let other people run theirs. Whereas the liberals are constantly in the press because they're so pushy that they get all the attention. So it gives an appearance that the people want this liberal type of government when people underneath really don't. But there isn't enough that are willing to stand up for principle and see that the right type of people are in our government. So consequently, we've got many problems facing the nation. But I guess these are all part of prophecy, and I guess this is why a person should lean more and more towards the church and try to understand the meanings and be able to prepare themselves for any eventuality, and at the same time do what they can to preserve our republic form of government. Seems like any time anything gets too big, whether it's government or church or business, the bureaucracy begins to set in and begins to put a stranglehold on the people. It seems that just not room for creativity and development and growth when anything gets too big. I've seen this in Grand Central. The larger it becomes, the more cumbersome it becomes, the less it's able to reach the needs of its people, and the less willing the people are to put forth in ideas because they usually don't get anywhere anyway. You never can get in to see the top man anymore. Those people are always too many people in between. It's very frustrating. And I think probably the church is endangered of the same problem of too many stake people are controlling things, and not enough information is getting back to the general authorities where they can really see the problems that exist among the people. It's probably the role of the bishop, but he's so involved with meetings and trying to keep statistics up that he hardly has time to take care of the emotional needs of his people. So I think that just the old problem of everything becoming too big, big cities, big government, big church, big business, when we have these things, we begin to reap the bad things from it. On the surface, it seems good. They used to always tell us when I was young, when the business was big, they'd be able to produce and sell cheaper, but time has proven that's not so. The small business can produce as well or sell just as reasonable as a big one, because a big one has too many problems. They're too cumbersome, too unwieldy, and they don't become creative anymore. Everything becomes regimented. the whole person's life is regimented and controlled, and you're told what to do and what to say and what to think and how to act. And so when, if you have ideas, why, to try to get them to the right person is very difficult. And so, but a lot, in spite of this, a lot of people still go into their own business, and so you have still throughout the country, with even all the bureaucratic problems and inflation and everything else, you'll find a lot of people still going to their own small business because they can't stand to work for these big companies where they have no opportunity to express themselves. I think this is one salvation of the country, is the creativity and the enterprising ability of the American people that keeps this country going. If we left it up to the great planners, why, we'd been bankrupt and been done with long ago. But in spite of our bureaucracy, we have enough people who are still keeping things rolling. It's hard to know what to put on a tape. You get different ideas and different thoughts, but try to say something that might be of value to those who may read it in the future or listen to it, the children or the grandchildren, great-grandchildren. So I've just kind of rambled on different subjects and different ideas and different things about the family and some of those aspects. And Rhoda gets back, I'll get her to do a tape or two and on the thing, experiences she's had in life, so you can also get her point of view, which will help considerably in correcting any inconsistencies that I might have given, or any lack of facts, I really should say, that or any misunderstanding that I might give, why, I'm sure she'll be able to correct this, so that it might be of some value to those who read it in the future. You know, this modern technology is quite interesting. I look at this little recorder, it's just about 4 inches by 12 inches, and I think if I'd had something this simple back when I was young and could have recorded my voice and the different things, you know, some of these things we've had for a long time, but we just neglected to use them properly. I know I have moving pictures from most of the kids when they were young. I guess Myrna was about 14 when I first started to take him, so I have a lot of moving pictures of the kids when they were little, but it'd been nice to have their voices, and I thought, well, gee, it'd been great if I'd, back on my wedding day or when I graduated from high school or different things, I would have sat down and could have recorded a few things. But of course, back that far, you didn't have these things, but we have been able to do this for the last 10 years or so, although the equipment is much more simplified and much smaller today. But the advances in the field of electronics are so rapid that we'll be able to, in fact, there's equipment now where we could actually do our own television taping, and just like I'm speaking now, could be on camera, and then those tapes could be preserved, and so that future generations could just put that on their television cassette and see what their great-grandfather looked like and what he thought about. So there's a lot of interesting things in life, and I guess we're foolish when we don't take advantage of some of these things and remember that the next generation is always interested in what went on in the past. I know I am. I wished I just had some things to read about my great-grandfather or grandfather, some of the things that he might have written, but there's absolutely nothing. The most that we have is my granduncle, Louis Kelch, who went to Germany and tried to gather up some of the information and recorded a few things, but they weren't very much. It's just a few things I mentioned before about Kelch's having this castle at near Longen. And previously, the Kelch's were Catholic, which most of southern Germany is, around Bavaria. You have to go up north before you meet the Lutherans. And so my grandfather was Catholic, and he was his father was, of course, Catholic too. And my great-grandfather died and left young children. And so he sent... He gave this money to the Catholic Church, which was supposed to take care of the children, but they don't always do what they promise to do. And so my grandfather learned to be a shoemaker, and they sent his brother, which was Louis Kelch, to Utah because his sister had emigrated here earlier, and so he was just, Lewis Kelch, just 9 years old, and being too young to care for himself, and no mother, no father, why, they sent him here to live with his sister. And he later went back, and because his sister had become married someone in the Mormon church, why, he later became president of the Northern States Mission and was filled a mission to Germany. And while he was there, he looked up his brother, which was my grandfather, and interested him in the church. And so in my father's home there in Germany, they used to have missionaries, some missionaries all the time. And Albert Toronto was one of them. And his son, which is Wallace Toronto, became a very good friend of mine. So later on, they, of course, emigrated to the United States. My father came first when he was 21 years old. He was, that time in Germany, you had to go into the draft, and his parents were planning to come, so if he got into the draft, he had been in there 2 or 3 years, maybe 4 years before, then he could have come, and they would have been here by then. So he came, so some missionaries gave him, one of the missionaries gave him his passport, so he came to the United States on a missionary passport, and after he got here, why, then the missionary reported that he had lost it. So my father had come in on illegal means, but later on he became a citizen, and things in those days weren't nearly as bad. If you got in a country, they didn't send you back, but they just had to become a citizen. But they, there's a lot that I wished I knew more about the Kelch family, and also the Peterson or Pedersen, whichever way you like to pronounce it, and my grandfather in Denmark. And I've never been to Denmark. This is one place on my list, but my mother, of course, was all Danish, and my father, being German, that they got along pretty well and raised 7 children. My mother died quite young. She was only 54 and died of a heart problem that started when she was young. She had rheumatic fever and just developed as she got older. And my father died when he was 78. He married one time after, but it wasn't too successful a marriage, and he died about 78. My grandfather Kelch was dead when I was born. And my grandmother, Kelch, who had remarried Mr. Szymanski, she died in her early 80s. And my grandfather, Peterson, was about 78 when he died, and my grandmother, Peterson, was in her 80s when she died. All the family is passed on now. I have no aunts or uncles except one, and that's my mother's sister, Aunt Sylvia. And she's in the rest home, and we visit her every Monday or every Tuesday evening and take her to dinner. She's the only one left of all the aunts or uncles. There's some on my father's side that I had never met, and I assume that they're dead too, because they'd be quite old. But we do see my Aunt Sylvia every once in a while, and she's the last of that family. So it seems like the time goes and they leave, and if they don't leave some record or some ideas of what they thought or what they believed, why, there's nothing for the next generation. So I thought I'd kind of get busy and say a few words on these tape, and I hope some of the things that I've given us will be of interest to those who listen to it. I guess maybe I wouldn't even have done it if I hadn't gone to Russia, but I sit here with nothing to do except read the paper or read a book or watch television, and television's so bad that I can't stand to see many of the shows. They're so crummy, so acting is so bad in so many of them, and so much pornography in them, and that they aren't interesting to listen to or to watch. So I find myself reading more like I did when I was younger, and been reading several books, and been reading some books about the Jews. I read one from the time of Abraham right on up to the present time about the Jews. It was quite interesting. I read another book on the Jews. And now I'm reading the Book of Mormon again. I thought, well, I know it pretty well. I thought I'll just read it from cover to cover again. Sometimes you need to do that to get a flow of things where you just read hit and miss here. You don't get the full feeling and the full magnitude of the book. So I find myself doing this, reading more and more books all the way through, where I, for the last few years, I just kind of pick here and there in different parts of the book that I might find interesting. But you lose a lot that way. It's best to read the whole book. So I'm trying to do a lot of reading now. I guess one never loses their quest for knowledge or for understanding. We're always seeking to try to improve our mind and know a little bit more so that we can find some of the answers to the life and its riddle. And life is very complex, and yet I guess it's very simple in other respects. But it seems like the more we learn or the more we know, the more we find out what we little we do know. And especially in our scientific age today, it's so complex with the computer age that it takes a whole vast number of people to develop some of these things. And if they were all wiped out, you wonder what would happen. No one could produce a new one. I wouldn't even know where to begin to make this little instrument that I'm speaking into. This little recorder and this little tape, it's quite a remarkable thing that right on this little tape, pick up all this voice and the different vibrations, and when it comes out, when it's played, why, it's just like it went in. And there's many remarkable things. We're really living in a remarkable age. It's just too bad that we can't preserve our freedoms and our dignity and have peace throughout the world with such great scientific strides. You know, man can put himself on the moon, and before long they'll be going around the different planets, and yet we can't seem to solve our own problems between nations or even between communities and neighbors. It's kind of heart-sickening at times when you think of all the wars and the killing and the problems that go on in life that could be prevented, and how much there is in life that we could enjoy. You know, the Lord creates an abundance of everything. You know, you just plant a handful of wheat and you get, you know, more than 10 times probably in what you sow into the ground. And everything brings forth abundantly. The Lord has provided this for us, that we would have everything we would need. All we have to do is put forth a little bit of work and sweat to get it. But man wants to complicate things so badly, and he wants to make... he wants to control his fellow man. I guess this is a great evil. And this is what I feel is the wicked of the earth, is those who want to control the lives of others, where they just can't seem to be satisfied if they're not dominating or controlling someone or passing more laws to control them. I've often felt that the best thing that could happen in this country, if the legislatures and the Congress wouldn't meet for 5 years so they couldn't pass any more laws, it would be the best stabling influence that this country could have.